The Mona Lisa rendered in peanut butter and jelly. Medusa drawn with spaghetti and marinara sauce. Portraits constructed from tons of garbage. The works of artist Vic Muniz display a sense of humor at work that tends to take serious matters lightly and light matters very seriously. The High Museum is currently running a retrospective of his career, and producer Mike Johns joined Muniz there in the gallery to talk about playing with images.
We're here in the gallery. We're sitting here right in front of this triptych of works that are they're images crafted from plastic toy soldiers, and this one in the middle is a pretty well-known image of a boy soldier.
Yeah, it's a stereotype for a 14-year-old Civil War soldier, you know. And then there's a look in his eyes, even when it's portrayed with toys, that it's looking at nothing ahead of him. It's just like a blank. The future does not exist. And it's for a 14-year-old, it's a very poignant gaze, you know. Well, they are, once you don't know what the camera is trying to say, you know, if it's actually describing a 14-year-old soldier or a whole bunch of toys, your brain is put to decide what you're looking at, you know, and it starts functioning. So, and then it's, before you know, you have a puzzle in front of you that can be read in many ways, and you can choose how you read it. And before you know, you're actually not only seeing something, but you're actually thinking about what you're seeing. And this is what makes this image different than most of the images that we see in our daily basis, you know, images that are trying to convey precise information. So these are not slow, immediate, automatic images that offer an automatic reading. They're not about the subject, because you don't quite know where the subject is. So you have to think about them. And when you start thinking about them, you see them in parts, and you realize that they are a mechanism. They have parts that work like gears, you know.
I mean, and, you know, and these images go from, I mean, this is a pretty heavy subject matter to, you know, just this one over here to our right, of this dual image of the Mona Lisa rendered in peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me what, and the one next to it of Jackson Pollock. Can you talk about that one a little bit?
Well, you know, the idea of the commonplace of an image such as the Mona Lisa, obviously, it's a take on Warhol. You know, Warhol made this double Mona Lisa. By making two of it, he just trivializes it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a trivial image. It's a common image. It's probably the most known image of mankind. And to do it with peanut butter and jelly is perfect, you know, like this is something that you probably have every day, you know, when you're a kid. But also, there's a humor element to it that also emphasizes the mechanical, this nature of images, you know. Humor is something that I take very seriously, because it can be a really powerful strategy to make people, you know, think about what they're looking at. I split the meaning of the image between like a visual element, like a pictorial thing, and actually a physical one. So you see, you know, a picture of the boy, the 14-year-old soldier, and then if you choose, you get to see what's made of, which are like little plastic soldiers. But you cannot get the two meanings at once. You have to give up one to get the other. Right. And when you do so, you know, you go through two different readings, and that is immediately sets you in a path to understand the process of how the picture was made, or actually become involved with the process, and you start looking at images as processes rather than objects or products.
At the same time as, you know, you're putting the onus on the viewer to bring something to the work, at the same time as you're doing that, these are also generally pretty easy images to process. There's sort of an equalization of understanding that happens in the audience. Like, I can look at this and see and recognize the irony of creating an image of a soldier boy out of toy soldiers. Uh-huh. Can you tell me about some of the reactions that you've heard from audiences of your work?
Well, you know, I'm very conscious of producing, or the fact that I need to produce work without a specific public in mind. The idea, I think it's quite easy to, you know, show erudition in a picture. You just have to spread some names or give it a pompous title or portray like some obscure, you know, 14th century philosopher, or make weird references to things that very few people know, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty easy to make it esoteric.
Yeah, it's really easy. And I remember I used to do that quite a lot when I was starting, because I needed to do it, you know, to prove to people that I was a boy that came from a favela in Brazil. But, I mean, 25 years go by and I realized that the hard thing is actually to produce intelligent art that can appeal to a wide range of, visual experiences or perspectives. So in art that also transcend cultural differences, age differences, socioeconomic divides. I find it interesting when we're able to produce art that can be appealing in so many ways to such eclectic groups, then you promote conversation between different people who are looking at it, because it offers you like this common ground. You know, there's no hierarchic reading of the image, because the image is done. It trivializes these things like such as the oil paint, the material, right? There's sometimes it becomes like the technique is dictated. The great painter is the one that can dominate the brushes and the material of oil paint. And it's just like the basketball, which is one guy that can't put this ball through a ring. You know, it's just it's one thing you do very well. And just because you have this specific set of rules. Once you start painting with chocolate, peanut butter, you know, it doesn't have, you know, you break all those rules, because these are things you have in your kitchen and they're no esoteric anymore. They call it unorthodox. Yeah, it's unorthodox based with other art materials, but they're kind of things that you're tired of knowing. And the iconography of my work is exactly the same. You know, I work with this sort of poster store imagery. Things that you've seen so many times, you think you know it by heart, or things you feel familiar with. So you don't feel you don't feel shocked, or they don't appear to you as something novel because my idea is actually to show you something that you think you know what it is, make you realize that it's not quite what you're looking at, and from then on, it is how I grabbed your attention. You know.
Yeah. Now this is sounding very familiar, like being a fan of Andy Warhol. Now you moved to New York in 1983, and you were contemporaries.
I met Warhol too. You know, I met them like five or six times. I used to play records on Tuesday. It wasn't the DJ. It was just actually you take one record and you put another one in the basement area, this club in New York in the 80s. And he used to come on Tuesdays. You know, and then I had a chance to talk to him quite a few times, but I think when you come to like artistic production, my biggest inspirations are one in each continent is Warhol, because of his choice of iconography, and Joseph Beuys because of the ritualization of the materials that he played. I think he brought back this idea of the artist as shaman, as some purveyor of new rich visual rituals, and I think I subscribe to that thinking. I'm very interested in believing and, forms of believing and the meaning of belief. Yeah. You know, going back to what you're saying my parents only set foot in the museum when they came to see one of my shows, and I was in my 30s then.
Wow.
I mean, they were late 50s, early 60s, so I think I'm very aware of that. And, the fact that museums can be, people can be afraid of walking to see something or be in a situation that they don't know how comfortable they'll feel. I mean, so I'm very concerned in making a brand of art that works as much as it works, as much for the museum director and its curators as it does for the people who do maintenance in the museum. And kids, for instance, I just did a workshop with children. They dig the work. They really understand it, you know. And older people would do too. Somebody, a professor, a PhD in art history, will be able to get a laugh of it as well. Mm-hmm. I call it the Simpson effect. You know, it's something that can work. It has an architecture that can be approached in many different layers. So,
yeah, I found myself walking around the gallery, just continually, you know, just being delighted and laughing. And so, yes, thank you. Yeah.